Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
Good evening. It's Wednesday night, the night after the primary, and this is Missouri Grassroots Radio, and we are live, broadcasting here, right on the internet, ready to give you some election results and a few other things tonight. And we are joined in studio tonight by Dave Court of the Hour of Truth. Thanks for being with me tonight, Dave.
Oh, it's always my pleasure to be with you, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Thank you so much. So, we kind of have a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. There's a lot of things going on. One thing that I was kind of noticing, I was kind of surfing around the internet today, and I was looking at the Real Clear Politics polling data, and a little bit surprised as we come off this primary election in Missouri, Obama is still trending above Mitt Romney in almost every poll except one, CBS New York Times poll from last week. Obama's got anywhere between a 1 to 10 point lead in any of the various polls. What do you think about that, Dave? You think that's a reliable?
I don't. Real Clear Politics uses a combination of polls that poll registered voters, and we all know that that's not the most reliable way to poll. Rasmussen, on the other hand, polls only likely voters.
Rasmussen has them tied, dead heat, 45-45.
Right, that's right. And the beauty of Rasmussen is, because it's polling likely voters, it's a more accurate poll. But Obama has trended downward. Obama's support has gone down in the last 2 months. Romney's has gone up in the last 2 months. No president has ever won who has polled below 50% at this time.
Ah, well, that's good news.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll take that. Go ahead.
And again, Ronald Reagan was way behind Jimmy Carter right now.
Yeah, that's what everybody keeps saying, you know, and that's fine. It just makes me nervous, and I do not understand. Okay. Lead me by the nose and explain it to me, because I do not understand how we can be. I don't think we have ever been, except maybe when our parents were living through the Depression, I don't think we have ever been in this state of utter confusion and chaos, so ready to be in just utter collapse. I mean, I think we're closer to collapse now than we were when the country lived through the Depression. How can this president be trending the way he's trending? I do not understand it. Explain it to me. You know?
Well, yeah, I have my own ideas. I don't know that anybody knows, but sure, during the Depression, America was brought together by the Depression, and it became a almost post 9/11 euphoria as people joined together. Prior to the Depression, there was no, as you know, the Depression is what brought us into the progressive era, brought on all these federal work programs, brought on Social Security, brought on things like that. And since the Depression, we're a whole different society. We have 50% of our people who are being promised by the president that if they vote for him, they'll continue to get paid by the government. He's buying votes.
So it's been generations and generations of conditioning towards social entitlements. So we have an entitlement mentality in our culture now that we didn't have during the Depression, is what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, during the Depression, people pulled together. They helped each other with food. They helped each other with work. They helped each other bring in the crops, and everybody got everybody else through it. You know, during the Depression, the worst economic time in American history, you didn't have people starving to death.
No, because, well, I mean, people were more prosperous. I mean, they could, you know, I remember my mom lived in the city and they had chickens, you know, and they grew and they grew food, and it was different.
And, I mean, they shared with their neighbors when their neighbors got sick, and when their neighbors couldn't go out and farm, they shared with their neighbors. They shared with the church. The church served the community. The community served itself. The community chest, which you see in the Monopoly game, was established during the Depression era, where communities, not federal largesse, poured into your city from the federal government through your state government, but a group of people in a city or village would get together and start a fund to help out people that got in trouble.
Right. And we don't have that now, because now we have Obama actually penalizing people for charities. So I can see. I look at these polls and I just don't understand how we can just be on the edge of disaster and total collapse and still people will vote. But I mean, that makes perfect sense, and it's totally rational and reasonable, I guess, if you look at it from that angle.
It isn't rational and reasonable. I mean, what he's telling them is, if you elect me, I will take more money away from the rich people and give it to you. And that can't go on forever.
Right, absolutely. The reasoning behind it, I do, you know, you can understand it, but you're right, it's wrong. It needs to stop. We need to change that attitude in the culture, and hopefully in November we'll get a few more people in who have the ability to bring America back to its foundational principles and its roots, to where we can bring those ideas back into the culture and change the way people think and get people out of that entitlement mentality. So, speaking of that, let's go to polling data. Let's go to election results. And let's talk about last night's election. I'm exhausted. Are you tired? I was up very late last night running around all over town trying to get to some of these after watch parties, and I was up too late last night. How about you?
I was up too late last night, and I'm just I'm kind of tired from the whole thing. You know, I mean, we've been you and I and millions of other people, but I know well about you and I. We've been going nightly since this thing started, and I'm as tired as any candidate of it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine. I was just exhausted after I got home last night. I traveled around to a couple of the watch parties around town. Let's start with the U.S. Senator race, the race to bump Claire McCaskill off of her socialist perch. You know, Todd Akin won that race quite handily, which was kind of wonderful to see. You know, we were all expecting kind of a squeaker, and he pulled out pretty quickly. You know, within the evening, you and I talked about this last night on the show, and beforehand, we were expecting this one to go into the wee hours. We didn't think that we were going to have results from this by the end of the night.
Yeah, that's right. It pulled away pretty quickly once it got started pulling.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a snippet. I was at the watch party last night for Todd Akin, and I was there to watch his victory speech, and we have a comment from Todd Akin. Let's listen.
I'm Lisa Payne Nager, Missouri Grassroots Radio.
How are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I was wondering if you'd like to give a statement for the radio show tomorrow night, and congratulate you on your victory tonight.
Well, actually, the statement I made there is the one I'd like to leave with you, if that's all right.
Okay.
Yeah, but we're basically centering on the themes that I mentioned, rebuilding the American dream and returning to the kind of traditional values that people in Missouri have stood for, and some fiscal responsibility. Let's get rid of the red tape and start creating some jobs, and so those basic themes.
So what part will the grassroots play in your campaign going forward?
It's always a big part of everything. Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Sure. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So it was a crazy place. The Collins Banquet Center in St. Charles County was packed last night, and the people were really energized, and you know, everybody was jazzed, and it was a very positive atmosphere, and everybody's very excited about looking forward toward November and knocking Claire McCaskill out of there. What's your opinion on that race, Dave? Were you an Aiken supporter?
I was not an Aiken supporter. I was a Bruner supporter. I am surprised, in fact. I was really surprised by that result. And again, there, right there, Lisa, is what I was saying earlier about putting a lot of trust in the polls. Bruner was a sure winner in that. And there you go, right there. I'm not disappointed. I voted for Bruner. I had my reasons. I've said them a couple of hundred times here in the last 2 months, and I'm not disappointed about Todd going back. Not as disappointed as I would have been had it been Steelman, or not nearly as disappointed as I am with some of the other races. I don't consider Todd a quote unquote establishment Republican, so I don't think we're done poorly there.
Well, has your opinion of him changed? Because have you kind of looked, I mean, do you look a little bit more favorably upon him now than you did before before you got deeply involved in his campaign?
No, I don't. I'm still upset about the Patriot Act. I'm still upset about NDAA. I'm still upset about the debt ceiling increase. But all in all, from a conservative perspective, you cannot say Todd Aiken is not a conservative senator or a representative, and I believe he will be a conservative senator. Now, I'm going to tell you, I am terribly worried, because he is an insider politician, about what effect Roy Blunt is going to have on him when he gets over there.
Yeah, well, I think Roy Blunt is the next target we need to put, you know, on somebody's back.
Oh, absolutely,
back.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to actually go after that seat next. But I do think that as far as campaigning against Claire, I think he'll do a much better job than the other two candidates would have done.
Oh, yeah,
Bruner.
We discussed that last night, and I believe so. I believe that we got the best of the three with just that consideration. I believe he is the best of the three. He will take Claire on the podium. He'll take Claire on the stage. He'll take Claire on the TV and the radio waves. And I think he'll do the much better job with taking her on, sure.
Okay, let's talk about the governor's race. Dave Spence won that handily, and I was really surprised at the margins there. I was kind of expecting Bill Randles to do better. I don't think any of the races has worked harder than Bill Randles. I think he worked the hardest campaigning in this election season than any other politician or any other candidate out there. And Fred Sauer came up behind him with more than 83,000 votes, and Randall had 90,000 votes to Dave Spence's 333,000 votes. So I was a little surprised Sauer garnered so many supporters out there. I really hadn't expected that.
No, I hadn't either. I was more than a little bit disappointed with that, for sure.
What do you think that says about the grassroots? I've been kind of looking at these results, and you know, we had some grassroots favorites, you know, for the statewide and then also for the district house seats, and you know, a lot of our grassroots favorites kind of fell flat, and I'm a little bit disappointed in that. I kind of expected a little bit more oomph from their campaigns, you know, support from the grassroots, and it's a little disheartening to me a little bit.
It is. I'm really disappointed, and I have a theory about what happened. First of all, the statewide turnout was 23.7%. That says a lot right there.
Yeah, and
that's less than 1 in 4. Okay. I have a theory about what happened with that. I think Jay Nixon was a shoe-in. Of course, on the Democratic side, most of the people on the Democratic side who needed to get there were guaranteed to get there. I believe in my heart, and I saw this happen in two districts, that a lot of Democrats went out and or a lot of Republicans with money went out and courted a lot of unions. And I believe that a lot of Democrats went to the polls yesterday and asked for a Republican ticket.
Interesting, because Jay Nixon received 269,000 plus votes, whereas Spence received 333,000 plus votes, so you may be right there.
Yeah.
Okay. Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder, Brad Lager, squeaker race.
That was a squeaker. That was actually a little bit, I was a little bit surprised at how close that one was.
Yeah, 41.6% for Lager and 44.2% for Kinder. And, you know, if I kind of predicted Lager to win it.
Did you?
Really?
Yeah, I did too. No, I did too. And I thought Lager would win it by a hefty margin, in fact.
Oh, did you? I didn't think it would be hefty. I thought it would be, you know, just pretty tight. But,
yeah.
You know, I guess with a race that's that tight, anything can happen. So it'll be Kinder for the Republican Party in November. And Secretary of State, wasn't expecting this one either. Shane Scholer won it. I expected him to win it over Scott Roop by less than 1 point. I don't know where in the heck Scott Roop came from, because I live in St. Charles County. He's my senator. He did almost no campaigning here as far as I could see. And I don't know what he did outstate, but I didn't see much coming on here in St. Charles County, and I didn't expect this to be close.
He took I'm sitting here looking at the MAC breakdown now. Roop took everything in and around. Say he took everything all up and down the eastern part of the state.
See in advertising from him down there in Springfield area?
We did not. We did not. You remember, I talked to you a couple of weeks ago when we were scheduling Shane Schuller, and I said it's just Schuller and Stouffer, right? And that's when you told me this name, Roop, and I went and looked him up, and no, that's all I've ever heard of him is what I looked up that day.
Yeah. Now, he's deeply rooted in the Republican establishment. I don't know what favors that got him or favor it won him in the eyes of the voters yesterday, but it must have worked because, I mean, he was really close with Scholer.
He was.
And Treasurer, I'm sorry?
No, he was. You're right. Yeah. No, that's all I said. He was. I was just agreeing with you. That's all. I didn't have anything to add.
Cole McNary was unopposed for treasurer, so he's gonna go up against Clint Zweifel, the Democrat, and Sean O'Toole, the Libertarian, in that race.
That's gonna be a tough one.
You think?
Yeah, I think. I think so. Yeah, Zweifel's the incumbent, and nobody really dislikes him.
Well, you know, Cole McNary pulled almost 500,000 to Zweifel's 267,000.
Well, again, but look at the Republican / Democrat breakdown in all the other races, like in the governor's race. So,
yeah, the Republicans came out in force.
Yeah.
Okay, my screen keeps refreshing on me. I keep losing my place.
if my theory's right, the Republicans and some union people came out in force on the Republican side of the ticket.
Right. Okay. It'll be Martin and Coster. For Attorney General.
Yep.
I think Martin will win that with both hands tied behind his back.
I do.
You do too?
I do too, yep.
Yep, okay. Adam Lee Warren, 148,000 plus votes, 28% of the electorate for Warren. I think we'll see him in the future. I like him. He's a nice young man.
Yep.
Let's see. And then we have the U.S. Rep districts. Let's see. Lacey Clay, here in St. Louis, Lacey Clay owns St. Louis. He beat out Russ Carnahan, which means there will be no Carnahans in Missouri politics after November.
Yeah, that's right.
Robin will be gone. Russ is gone. Everybody's gone. No more Carnahans. They're all gone.
Yep.
So, you know, not that it's great for Lacey Clay to be, you know, in the first representative district. That'd be really nice if we could get somebody in. Robin Hamlin beat Martin Baker. I know Martin Baker, great guy. I was kind of surprised to see him lose to Robin Hamlin, but she will go up against Lacey Clay in November. So that'll be interesting to see if they can pull some grassroots there to give her some support. And here in St. Louis, Ann Wagner handily beat all of the challengers. Randy Jotti was the next challenger with 18,000 votes to Ann's 53,000. And let's see, who are the U.S. reps in the Springfield area down there?
Billy Long beat Mike Moon handily.
Okay. Is he Hartzler?
Hartzler won handily, yes.
Yeah. And let's see here. Am I missing any other very key important races, Dave?
I don't think so. Where in your mind does that leave us? I think we're gonna concede the governorship back to the Democrats.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that, because I kind of thought, you know, everybody I've talked to thinks that, you know, unless, you know, the world starts revolving, you know, spinning in another direction, that Jay Nixon is absolutely going to maintain his seat in the governor's office. So what do you think about picking up any seats in the House and the Senate to bring a veto-proof legislature?
I'll tell you. I think we pick up some seats. I think we pick up three or four seats. And again, this is about 6 hours of analysis for me looking at this today. But I think we pick up three or four seats. I don't have them written down here. I'm not ready to name them yet. But I don't think it matters because for the bulk of the legislature, we're putting the same pseudo conservatives in there that we had this last session. So I don't think even a quote-unquote conservative House and Senate is going to be veto-proof.
Even if we have the numbers to be veto-proof and we got some interesting – well, like, you know, I mean, Martin, I know, has got some interesting ideas for pushing some interesting initiatives, you know, through and challenging some things. If we had a veto-proof legislature and we could get a few – you know, we could get some grassroots support for some things like right to work, or, you know, some of the great things actually that Randall's was campaigning on, like tort reform, right, or, you know, education issues, yeah, fair tax, those kinds of things. And we could get the numbers in the House and the Senate to be veto proof. They wouldn't have any excuse, because they've been using Nixon as an excuse to not get anything done.
Right.
You know. And you're right. It's a pseudo rhino conservative legislature. I think they have been resting on their laurels and just using it as an excuse not to move on things. And if we could pick up some seats, they wouldn't have an excuse anymore.
Well, I'm with you on that. And I'm sorry I was not prepared for that, but I will be. You and I will talk about that tomorrow night. I'll come with names and seats, and we'll look at. We'll look at who's vulnerable, and we'll look at what we need to do to make that happen.
Okay. We'll just kind of throw that around and let people start chewing on it and see if anybody's interested in attacking that little deal. Any interesting house seats down there in your neck of the woods that interest you at all?
You mean at Jeff City or up in Washington, D.C.?
In Jefferson City, the races, any of the races that I've missed that we need to touch on?
Not down here. Everything is pretty much going to stay the same. We had pretty much incumbents running unopposed. Eric Burleson for me.
Ed Emery won his district very, very easily.
Ed Emery won. That's a good – see, there's a good pickup right there, and Ed will go to Jeff City. So, there's a pickup for us. I don't mean pickup from a Democrat. We're not going to – it's not a pickup from a Democrat, so it's not going to get us closer to our veto-proof Senate, but it's a pickup for the grassroots and for the Patriot movement.
Yeah, good deal. Okay, very good. All right, let's
so
take
I,
a very...
I think we hold the lieutenant governor. I think we win the secretary of state. I think we win the attorney general. So I really think that in the executive branch, we make big gains.
Okay. And whether or not that'll help move us along, you know, with the Patriot grassroots movement and get us closer to freedom and liberty, I'm not so sure. You know, the Secretary of State, you know, maybe if we can get somebody in the Secretary of State's office, maybe we won't have the ballot issues that we've had in the past with Robin Carnahan. You know, maybe Ed Martin can pull some good moves and, you know, strengthen a few things legislative, you know, or technically, you know, with the laws and fight Obamacare a little stronger, those kinds of things. But
and see, that's a strategy you could use in Jeff City. I mean, if you don't have a veto-proof House and Senate, the strategy you could use is send every damn thing to the voters.
Yeah. Oh, God, really? Do we want
to? I mean, no, if it's important. I'm not talking about if it's naming a post office or declaring someday school teacher's day or something like that. But I'm talking about anything important like a fair tax or something like that, a right to work. If you want to get it done, send it to the voters.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, I think we use ballot initiatives way too much. You know, we have so many laws on the books now that cover almost just about everything. You know, I mean, and we've talked at length about Amendment 2, which also passed overwhelmingly last night. I don't know about relying on putting things on, you know, putting that much to the ballot initiatives to the voters. But, you know, it is a strategy, and I guess you could use it. So we'll work on that. We are supposed to have Tom Martz here tonight. He hasn't called in yet. Why don't we take a break, and we'll go to our interview with Usama Dokdoff and see if we can't wait for Tom Martz to show up and talk about Locke and Smith, and then we'll wrap up with some Prop E and Amendment 3 talk. Does that sound fine?
Well, you don't have to ask me. It's your show, Lisa.
Okay. Oh, you know what? I do want to play. I did get a statement from Ed Martin. So before we close, I want to play a statement from Ed Martin. He's fired up and ready to go since he won his race so handily.
Let's hear it.
Okay. We have Ed Martin on the line with us tonight. We want to congratulate him on his big win last night. Thank you for being with us tonight, Ed, and congratulations to you.
Great to be with you, Lisa. Thank you. It was a good start. You know, the primary elections, you take every election seriously, but it's prelude to the big November election. So we're excited about the momentum and grateful for everyone's support and votes.
So you had a pretty handy win over your opponent, but you also had a pretty handy win over the Democrat. So the numbers, the Republicans came out in force, and not only did you beat the field in your race, you beat the field everywhere.
Well, yeah, we're excited. I mean, it's the primary. First of all, I want to give credit and respect to Adam Warren, the prosecutor who I ran against, who's a very fine fellow. I spoke with him on election night late in the evening, and we had a good chat. We're going to work together to, you know, as he said, he's a prosecutor over in Livingston County, and he said, I'll paraphrase, he said, I really could use a good attorney general so that I can work with him. And the current attorney general, Democrat Chris Koster, is falling down on the job. So that was nice. Adam Warren's a nice young man, and we're happy to win, and we did very well, as you say. I think people in Missouri, voters, and our Missourians are saying to each other that we need to stop what's going on, and the current Attorney General, Democrat Chris Koster, has really been Obama's lawyer, not the lawyer for we the people, and I hope we can build on the momentum and win in November, and then the hard work starts. I think next January, if I'm sworn in as Attorney General, we have a lot of hard work to get our state and country back on track.
Absolutely. Yeah, we like Adam Warren, too. We think he's an impressive young man, and we look forward to his future in Missouri politics as well. Okay, so moving forward, you know, you're going to be, formulating your campaign going into November. How is the grassroots going to help you do that, Ed?
Well, there's good campaigns, in my opinion, in this moment in our lives is about issues and accessibility and, you know, answering the hard questions about what you think about the issues and what really means what to people. And so, you know, when you talk about grassroots, what I've always felt like is our campaign has been, you know, one about the people and the volunteers and others. And I think they come and we hold each other accountable and we go out and communicate what's going on. And, you know, it's really two sort of fundamental issues right now. One is, I think people are talking about, one is the culture of corruption that is sort of, you know, enveloping Obama's administration and the current Democratic Attorney General, Chris Koster, this idea that use government for the advantage of the chosen few and for your own campaign. I think that's really become a centerpiece. We just have to get rid of that. And we have to get rid of career guys like Koster and all. But the second thing is very clear is the rule of law is supposed to mean what it means. The Constitution is supposed to have meaning. And right now we're seeing the rule of law and the Constitution trampled upon by things like Obamacare and the EPA and others. So it's a very difficult time, but in the sense that we're all worried, but I think there's a coming together that we're going to, again, win in November and then hold each other accountable next year as we get in office to try to make things better.
Very good. Thank you very much. We are speaking to Ed Martin, the Republican nominee for Attorney General here in the state of Missouri. Looking forward to the November elections. Thanks for being with us, Ed.
Thanks, Lisa. Take care.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back here at Missouri Grassroots Radio. I have an opportunity this week to talk to a wonderful man named Usama Dakdok. And this is a man who travels the country educating people on the extremist Muslim invasion into America and what it's doing to our culture. And he is a minister. He's also the son of a Baptist minister who was born in Egypt and was raised as a Christian, but in the Muslim culture. So he has firsthand knowledge of what the Muslim culture is and how it is really meant to destroy the Christian foundation and the Christian religion and any other religion that is not Muslim. So let's take a moment here and listen to Usama Dakdok. Welcome to Missouri Grassroots Radio. You're listening to Lisa Payne Nager, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We are here this evening with Mr. Usama Dakdok. Mr. Dakdok has been traveling the country with people like Pamela Geller to educate Americans on the Muslim invasion of our culture and how serious that invasion is creeping into our society and changing things in a very stealthy way. Mr. Dakdok, thank you for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me on your show, and appreciate this opportunity to speak to you, all the audience.
Now, Mr. Dakdok, it's my understanding that you've been doing this work for quite some time, but can you give me a little bit of background about how you got started on this process and how you were led to, and called to do this great work and spread this information?
Sure. Well, I was born in Egypt in a Christian family. I learned about Islam in the school system in Egypt, which is part of every Christian good school. You must learn about the Quran. You must learn about Islam. I studied also 2 years in college in Alexandria, Egypt, where I studied about Sharia, Islamic law concerning marriage and divorce. And I came to America 20 years ago, and I saw America to be the greatest Christian nation. Sadly, my thoughts were not right, and I was surprised and shocked to my bones to see that there are Muslims in America, and not just as an immigrant, but they're here actually to infiltrate America, to take over America for Allah. And as you know, we in America believe that we're all immigrants, so Americans do not see anything wrong for having Muslims immigrated to America. And as a matter of fact, we still have our airports all over this country are open 24/7 for airplanes to land in America from 57 Muslim countries. And these airplanes loaded by Muslims, and by the way, none of these Muslims leave America, even though they come here as a tourist or as a student or as a business or as a whatever vacation, or whatever reason they come here, they never leave this country. And we have all the politicians in America talk about the illegal Mexican, but not one person, not one governor, not one senator, not one congressman, not one judge, not one person in this country ever talk about illegal Muslims. And that's not the profit anyway. So these Muslims who come to America as an immigrant, they're not here to immigrate to our country, America, because they love our freedom or love our democracy. They're here to practice the teaching of Allah in the Quran. And if you read the Quran, which is, by the way, it is available now in our true English translation for the first time in the history of Islam, after 1,400 years, now we can read the Quran in another language besides Arabic, a true modern English translation, which is the Jewish Quran. Our translation is available on our website, thestraightway.org. It's also available on Amazon. It's called the Generous Quran. But if you read the Quran, you'll be shocked to find that every time Allah in the Quran mentions the word immigration, he said, those who believe and immigrate, and he does not stop there. You read the following statement, which is, and perform jihad for the sake of Allah. See, there is ties in the teaching of Allah in the Quran between immigration and performing jihad. Because when Muslims travel from the Muslim world to Europe or to Australia or to Canada or to America or to anywhere, they're not immigrating for the better life. No, they're immigrating to infiltrate, to take over the rest of the world. And that is how dangerous it is to see Muslims living in America. And as much American people, sadly, they do not know anything about Islam as much as they don't see anything wrong for even having a Muslim president or having a Muslim senator or a Muslim congressman. These Muslims are here to take over this country, and they will take it, and America will fall from within, and that is a great danger.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question here, because this seems to be the biggest wall that I hit up against when I try to talk to people about this issue. People are really afraid in America of being politically incorrect and starting kind of a culture war with the Muslim faith. It's exactly as you described it. They don't see anything wrong because we're a melting pot. Our tradition is being a melting pot. They don't see anything wrong with a Muslim coming into this country as opposed to anybody else. How do you address that when you talk to people, because you know that there is an agenda with Muslims who come into America?
It is a simple answer. If you do the same thing and expect a different result, that is what we call stupidity or craziness, madness. They tried the melting pot in Europe, and it did not work. Have you heard the lady in the parliament, lady in Germany, what she said? It did not work in Germany. It did not work in England. It did not work in Ireland. It did not work in France. Why do you think it's going to work in America? The reason it did not work in Europe, because Europeans did not bother to waste their time to read the teaching of Allah in the Quran. They did not bother to read the teaching of Muhammad in the Hadith. Let me tell you one verse from the Quran and one verse from the Hadith, and you tell me if this melting pot will work in America. Muhammad in the Hadith said, I have been commanded by Allah to engage in war with people until people testify to the fact there is no God but Allah and I am his messenger. So the message of Muhammad, the prophet of Islam, can be condensed to one sentence. I am here to kill you until you become a Muslim. It did not work in Europe because Europeans did not know that is the real Muhammad, the prophet of Islam. Allah in the Quran said to the Muslim people, engage in war with them. Allah will torment them by your hand. He will give you victory over them, and he will heal the chest of the believing people. Allah in the Quran mentioned this Muslim 79 times, 79 verse, 79 command for Muslims to engage in war with infidels. Allah in the Quran told Muslims that all Christians are infidels. All Jews are infidels. If you don't believe in Islam, you are infidels. And you expect you're going to have these people in a melting with our here in our culture. There's only 1% Muslim or 1.something in America Muslim live in this country. And they already, all of them, who are legal, raise their right hand. Give allegiance to America, to the flag of the United States of America, to the Constitution of America. But the same 1% are asking our legislators to get rid of our Constitution and replace it with Sharia, Islamic law. And they're only 1.5% or less. Can you imagine if when the 1.5% become 4% or 6%, they will force their law on your children and your grandchildren. They will behead anyone in America who does not believe in Islam. Why? Because Allah in the Quran said in chapter 47, verse 4, we meet those who became infidels, strike the necks, decapitate them until you have made a great slaughter among them.
Okay, let me ask you this.
In America is, my sister, the problem in America is the ignorance of all those who are defending Muslim and Islam of the teaching of Allah in the Quran and the teaching of Muhammad in the Hadith. If we know Islam, we will never allow Muslims to live in America or to build a mosque in America.
Okay, so
we don't know who these people are.
Yeah, that's my next question to you, and that's what most Americans are asking. How do we know? Because we've been told there are peaceful Muslims, and we've been told there are extremist Muslims. How do we know the difference?
It's very simple. It's very simple. If you know Islam, you will know everything about these people. Allah in the Quran, chapter 47, verse 75, said what? Do not be weak. Allah speaks, by the way, to the believer, or you who have believed. Okay? Do not be weak, calling for peace, when you have the upper hand. That's the direct command of Allah, that when the Muslims in America will have the upper hand, they will not be peaceful. There is not one verse in the Quran teach this. Let me give you another verse. 551, chapter 5, verse 51. Allah in the Quran said, oh, you who believe, he's talking to believer now, not to extremists, not to the bad Muslim, this is a good Muslim. Do not take the Jews or Christians for friends. They are friends to one another. Whoever among you takes them for a friend, become one of them. Surely Allah will not guide the unjust people. It is sin in Islam for Muslims to take Christian and Jew for friends. Well, someone would say, wait a minute, Brother Islam, you're wrong. Dr. Muhammad, the doctor of my children or my family doctor, he's a good Muslim man, he's a friendly, he's peaceful. And my neighbor, sister, whatever name she has, Fatma, and her family, they're wonderful. They play with our children, they have good time with our children. We have no problem with our friends, or Muslim here and there. I say, read the Quran, chapter 3 and verse 28, which is called Taqiyya, which the verse clearly teaches Muslims not to take infidels for friends. But for protecting yourself, Allah said, if you want to protect yourself from them, then you pretend to be their friend. The interpretation of the verse is very clear by all Muslim scholars. Ibn Kathir, Tabari, Qurtubi, Jalalayn, all Muslim scholars said, you make them your friend with your tongues only, not by your heart.
So is it fair to say then, because that is what most Christians and most Americans believe, that there are peaceful Muslims and they are our friends, that if someone is practicing the Muslim religion, that they are not truly being truthful with you, that if they truly believe in the Quran and they practice the Muslim religion, they are not your friend?
Well, according to Islam, to be a Muslim, you never take a Jew for a friend, you never take a Christian for a friend. That's not my opinion. That's not the opinion of some Christian or some Jew out there or some East out there. That is the word of Allah. And they can take us for a friend when they are not in power in the land, when they have the upper hand. Guys, for heaven's sake, don't believe me. Don't believe what happened in Egypt 1,400 years ago because they're far away. How about look at what's happening in Europe today? What's happening in England today will be in America 10 years from now. What's happening in France today will be in America 10 years from now or less. We have a Muslim brother in America. The deception in Islam is beyond measure. You cannot understand it. Allah, the God of Muhammad, is known in the Quran by the best deceiver. Allah in the Quran said what? هُمْ مَكَرُوا وَاللَّهُ مَكَرًا وَاللَّهُ خَيْرُ الْمَكْرِينَ. What does that mean in English? It means they deceive, and Allah deceives, and Allah is the best deceiver. Their God is the best deceiver, which is known in the Bible by Satan. These people will deceive you. And sadly, my dear sister, to be honest with you, to be fair and balanced here, there are plenty of Muslims who are deceived. They think they follow the true faith. They think Islam is a loving, peaceful religion simply because they never themselves read the Quran. And praise God for hundreds and thousands of Muslims. When they start to read the Quran and study the Quran, they left Islam. We have today in Egypt thousands of Muslim imams, doctors, and colleges, professors, who are leaving the cult of Islam and becoming Christian because simply they got sincere with themselves and they found that Islam is not a religion, as you introduced it in the beginning of the program, or a faith. Islam is a barbaric cult with a political agenda to take over the world. And I beg the American people to read the Quran. I'm not asking you to read my new book, The Revelation of Error. I'm not asking you to read any books written by some Jew or some Christian or some anti-Muslim. Read the book of the Quran. Their holy book is the answer, America. That's why, my dear sister, after we translated this Quran, we send a copy to every senator, to every congressman, to every governor, to the High Supreme Justice Court, and we, at the end of this next election, we will send a copy to the new senators and the new congressmen and the new governors. We will not quit,
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the work that you do among the Muslim community and bringing and introducing Christianity to the Muslims.
Well, my dear sister, the ministry has two goals. Number one, educate the American about Islam. And I say it with all respect. American people are the ignorant people of planet Earth about Islam. I mean, Americans are smart about everything, but when it comes to Islam, they know nothing. I mean, literally. Energy is what is going to destroy. It's not going to be destroyed because Iran is going to launch on us some nuclear bomb, which they will someday, from South America or from the East Coast. But America will be destroyed from within because Muslims take over America because we do not know anything about Islam. So we need to educate the Americans in general, the church in particular, because I believe American people are not going to reach out to the Muslim with the gospel of Jesus Christ, but the church. But sadly, neither the American people nor the church have a clue what Islam is. So we educate the American about Islam, and then we educate the Muslim about Islam. If they believe in what is written in the Quran, and they're here to practice taqiyya, to protect themselves from our temporary peace or temporary love, these people need to be removed from our country. And if they are deceived and they do not know anything about Islam, therefore we need to educate them, then we can remove them from the cause of Islam. And I'm saying this sincerely, because if we say we believe that Obama killed Osama bin Laden, we say, why Obama killed Osama bin Laden? Because Osama bin Laden is a radical Muslim. Good, good. Any radical Muslim living in America should not be alive, should be dead or get out of our country. That is the law. Because our constitution gives the permission for freedom of religion. Islam itself does not give freedom of religion. If you are not a Muslim, according to Islam, I must kill you to force you to Islam. I will kill you to take your children to Islam. I will kill you and your children to take your grandchildren to Islam. So the religion itself, the cult itself of Islam is anti-our constitution. And if somebody believes that they're going to kill me, or they're going to kill you, or they're going to behead your grandchildren because they are not Muslim, then somebody needs to be killed, as Obama did to bin Laden, if that is true, or we will just blindly ask them to leave our country. Now, the rest, if you do not believe in the teaching of the Quran, after you learn the truth about Islam, then they need to convert to atheism, some other cult who does not teach to kill Christian or Jew, or I would love to see them all becoming a Christian. So my heart desire is to see Muslims come to know Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. But if they don't want to believe in Christianity, we cannot force them to Christianity. I just want them out of this barbaric cult of Islam. Because as a matter of fact, any cult in the world exists. Not one cult teaches to kill people if you don't believe in their cult, except the cult of Islam. So it is anti-freedom of religion. If somebody does not want to believe there is a God, we Christians are never commanded by Jesus to force him or to kill them. As a matter of fact, Jesus was very clear. We shake the dust of our feet. If I come to your house and I walk in your in front of your house and I have dust from your dirt, from your land on my shoes, and I come and tell you, Jesus loves you. He is the Son of God who died on the cross and rose again for your sin. If you believe in him, you will receive forgiveness for your sin because he paid for your sin. And you say, well, Brother Usama, thank you so much. I'm not interested in your Christianity. Thank you. Goodbye. Before I leave your driveway, I will shake the dust out of my shoes from your driveway, so I will not even teach you that, but I will never kill you. But Islam does not teach that. Islam teaches, I'm telling you, become a Muslim. And you say, no, thank you. I say, okay, here's your head. Take off your head. That is the teaching of Allah in the Quran, not my teaching. I'm not making this up.
Right.
American, please, read the Quran, and you know the truth for yourselves.
Okay, we've been talking with Usama Dakhdov from the Straight Way of Grace Ministry. Go to www.thestraightway.org. We really appreciate your input today, and thank you for being with us today on Missouri Grassroots Radio.
Thank you so much. God bless you. Appreciate this as well.
Thank you.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Welcome back to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We are now joined with Tom Martz from the Locke and Smith Foundation. Tom has been working with several others in that foundation every year. They pick a stable of legislators in Jefferson City who have sponsored legislation to bring the country back or bring the state back to its constitutional roots. And thanks for being with us tonight again, Tom. Tom is always with us also on our Yankee Doodle legislation alerts. Thanks for being with us, Tom.
Thank you for inviting me.
We're glad to have you here. We didn't have a chance to talk the last time you were on about the Locke and Smith Foundation, so why don't you give us a little background about what you guys are, what you guys do, and then we'll kind of talk about the finalists.
The Locke and Smith Foundation is a 501c4. We consider ourselves a non-biased, non-political organization who just happens to, at its core, we originally got together as the Young Conservatives, and we thought we were going to write legislation which would benefit the whole of Missourians. And then we found out that we didn't know how to write legislation, so we decided to educate ourselves on legislation itself. And once we got into that, we discovered that we don't need to write laws. We don't need to write anything because everything under the sun is already covered under Missouri Revised Statutes. They introduce stuff that's so far off the wall that people wouldn't even imagine that those things get brought up.
They introduce 2,000 pieces a year of legislation, and that's a hefty job. I mean, you guys kind of sift through all of that every year.
Well, when they initially do the pre-filed bills in December, we start perusing through them to see which ones that we think should go someplace. And then, of course, we've got the ones that we absolutely believe should go nowhere. And then every time a piece of legislation achieves the status of third read and passed and it's transferred either from the House to the Senate or the Senate to the House, then we review it and compare it to the constitutions of the state of Missouri or the constitution to the U.S., depending on which one the bill falls under. And if there is no constitutional aspect of this piece of legislation, we'll reject it as being unconstitutional. Now, there are attorneys and judges and those saying, well, you can't make that determination. Well, we're going back to the original document, you know, when it was written. Back when things actually meant that general welfare did not mean that everybody under the sun gets a paycheck just because they live here in the United States of America.
Right. Okay. So after you analyze this legislation each year, you go through and you attach a grading scale to the various legislators in the House and the Senate. So let's talk a little bit about that process.
Every time a bill is rated as a good piece of legislation, and a good piece of legislation pretty much has to reduce the size, scope, and power of government, or it has to be something that is within the constitutional bounds that it is a proper function of government. When those things are rated as a good piece of legislation, every House member and every Senate member who votes yes on that piece of legislation will score a point for a correct vote. Those who vote no don't score anything. If you vote present or abstain, we feel that you should be able to make a decision one way or another. So we will deduct a point if you decide not to take a stance on an issue, regardless of circumstances. And then on a piece of legislation that we deem not beneficial, these are the ones that increase the size, scope, and power of government. These are the bills that also take away from your life, liberty, and your pursuit of happiness in multiple ways. If you vote no on a bad piece of legislation, you'll also score a point. Those who vote yes will score nothing. And those who vote present and abstain will, again, receive a one-point deduction. And at the end of the year, when all these bills work their way through the process, House to Senate, Senate to House, and then back to House, back to Senate, and finally work their way to the governor's desk, every time this bill achieves a status of third read and passed, it's graded. So you literally can be scored three different times on the same piece of legislation. And we tally up all those votes, and whoever achieves the highest point score at the end of the year is given a granite plaque, and they are awarded the most constitutionally voting member of the state legislature and the state Senate.
Okay, so let's announce who those top five finalists in the Senate and the House are. Do you have that with you? Because I've got it in front of me if you don't have it.
Go ahead, because I don't have it in front of me.
Okay, so for the Senate, the top five finalists for the Locke and Smith Award this year are Senator Victor Callahan, Senator Jack Goodman, Senator Will Krause, Senator Jim Lemke, who was last year's winner, and Senator Rob Schaaf. And for the House of Representatives, we have Representative Paul Kirtman, Representative Andrew Koenig, Representative Melissa Leach, Representative Nick Marshall, and Representative Ronald Schieber. And so all of these people are up for the award in September. You have an awards banquet in September. Is that right, Tom?
The awards banquet this year is going to be held on September the 15th. We are trying to do this award on the closest Friday or closest Saturday to Constitution Day, which anyone who follows American history, Constitution Day is September the 17th. So the closest Saturday is the 15th. We're having a banquet down here in Springfield, Missouri. It's at the University Plaza. Our featured speaker is a former Justice of the Supreme Court for the state of Missouri, John C. Holstein. And
How can people find out how to get tickets to your event?
LockeandSmith.com. That's Locke with an E at the end. It stands for John Locke and Adam Smith, not Master Locke. And there is a toolbar on the top of the screen, and it will tell you how you can purchase tickets, how you can look at the research that we do, how you can look at the rest of the Senate and the rest of the House, not the top five. We don't have them categorized yet, but you can actually go in and you can see where your senator or your House member finished the point total if they are not listed in the top five.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Tom Martz from the Locke and Smith Foundation. The winners, one in the Senate and one in the House, will be announced at the banquet on the 15th of September. Go to lockeandsmith.org and find out how to get your tickets for that event. Thanks for being with us, Tom.
Gates.com.
It's not Tom?
Yeah, it's lockeandsmith.com.
Lockeandsmith.com. Okay, not org. Okay, very good. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
We're gonna talk for the last couple of minutes. Missouri Grassroots Coalition is going to take it on as an issue to help to educate the folks on Prop E and Amendment 3 for the upcoming election. Isn't that right, Dave?
That's right. We've got some material together already, and we're working on more, Lisa.
Okay. We feel it's very important because of the way the ballot language was written, especially on Prop E, that it's very misleading, and this is something that the grassroots movement needs to be able to be educated on and informed on, and help inform the rest of the voting public. And we have time between now and November to do that, so please stay updated. We're running out of time. I'm sorry. I hope that we would have more time. We can maybe do this in podcast for a few minutes to talk about what our plans are for as Missouri Grassroots moves forward on these amendments in November. But we've got some forum pages up at the website with information on the Prop E. We'll be also looking at Amendment 3. That's the ballot initiative about the judges. And we will be giving you to-do items to go out there and to address the community on these issues so that we can help inform the folks about how to stop some bad things that might be coming on the ballot that are deceptive in November. You got anything to add about that, Dave?
I don't know, and we will, like you've already said, the rest of this week is going to be pretty much in this kind of thing, so we'll go into this in depth tomorrow night on the Hour of Truth, and then we'll probably debate it a little bit on Friday night, too. So folks can tune in and find out all they need to know about this for right now.
Okay, very good. All right, we'll leave it at that then. We'll be talking about Prop E and Amendment 3 for the rest of the week. Tune in. Thanks to Tom Martz for being with us tonight. Thanks to Osama Doc Doc. And thanks for going out and voting this week and making a difference and helping to shape the general election. This has been the Culture Vigilante Hour from Missouri Grassroots Radio. We'll be here next week at 7.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.